of Prasa and the team were just about to give us some responses, and if they can be very economic with time, probably we can make it within 2 hours. But they must not be economic with responses. That's what I would want to say. Chairperson, the stage is yours together with your team.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. We had started responding to the questions that were asked in the previous round, and Martha was still responding, and she had called in the competent manager to just cover some areas. So I think, Martha, we can hand back to you to conclude the questions that relate to rail, and we'll proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I'll be guided also, because I thought that Mr. Ngojani would just give an indication to Parliament in relation to the respective directives, exactly where we are and what it is that we have concluded with the RSR, so that we don't just say things without necessarily showing it to members of the Parliament, that the work that has been done. Mr. Ngojani.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to focus on the number of directives that were issued per province. In Gauteng, we had about 108 directives that were issued. 85 of these were closed. Only 23 are still open. Western Cape, we had 53 directives that were issued. 31 of those were closed. There's only about 22 of those that are still outstanding, not closed. KZN, we received 36 directives from the Office of the Regulator. 34 of those were closed by KZN. 2 are still open, only 2 in KZN. Eastern Cape, we only received 2 directives. 1 is closed. There's only 1 that is still outstanding. For the mainline passenger services, which is Shosholoza Mail, we received 14 directives. 8 were closed. There's 6 that are still outstanding. Prasa Rail head office, we received 6. We closed 6. There's nothing that is still open on our side from Prasa head office. Thus, Chairperson, I gave you the total of 219 issued directives, 165 closed, and 54 that are still outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I may ask Chairperson through you that Ms. Ngabi Mareko deals with the issues of manual authorizations and advises Parliament as to how we are going to deal with the issues of manual authorizations going forward.
Chairperson, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be giving a brief overview of where these issues are, what are they, and what we've done to date. Yes, PRASA is experiencing a number of, or an acceptable number of manual train authorizations. And these are caused mainly by your failures in the signaling system, theft and vandalism
of this equipment. And in those sections where there is re-signaling, we would then authorize trains. What is then required to address these issues, your maintenance interventions, security interventions, as well as the personnel who are actually involved in authorizing these trains. Currently, these problems, especially with incidents, are experienced mainly in the Gauteng region. We have worked on interventions to address some of the problems or challenges that are experienced in Gauteng. Regarding the signaling issues, we've contracted Siemens to do emergency repairs of the signaling system. They have completed that line between Olifantsfontein and Kempton Park. So currently, as we speak, these trains are now running on signaling. We've been authorizing on those sections for an extended period of time. They will then be finishing the section between Geldenhuys and George Koch by the end of next week, where the signaling system will then be up and running. So when the signaling is up and running, it means that we do not have to manually authorize trains. Thereafter, they will then move to the Roodepoort Randfontein line, which should be completed during that first week of November. Over and above that, because this is a new system that's installed by Siemens, we do not have resources currently or capacity to maintain that system. We are currently busy with a three-year contract with Siemens to support us in terms of maintenance while we build in-house capacity to maintain those areas where there's been re-signaling by Siemens. Then the second element that talks to people who are actually authorizing, and I think in the RFR presentation of earlier today, they did touch on human error-related issues. We have made a submission to the regulator that talks to supervision. In our submission, we did indicate that we are under-resourced or understaffed in terms of supervisors. We've then submitted a detailed HR plan that gives timelines in terms of when we would then beef up supervision in terms of section managers who then supervise the personnel who authorize as well as the train drivers. So in short, Chairperson, that is what I have.
The response is completed. As far as safety, customer, did you speak to customer safety? I mean customer service and those
steps? Yes, Chair. Yes, honourable member, I did speak to the issues of customer services.
Thank you. Chair, through you, if I may ask Mr. Makura to speak around the safety questions that were asked.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. My name, as they've said, is Joseph Shoka Makura. I'm acting head of corporate security in Brazza. The question that I was supposed to deal with it was mainly the issues of cameras at the station. We have checked two areas so far, Park Station and Cape Town Station. In Park Station, we found out there was 425 cameras that we have checked, and then at the station itself, and then the area where the buses are stopped, or are stationed. There's no cameras there. The other issue with those cameras, out of those cameras, 31 cameras were not functioning. The problem that also that we have checked, I don't know the, I'm not a technician, I don't know the lifespan of cameras that's supposed to be, how long must they be installed or replaced, and also the maintenance of it, you know. And then in Western Cape, we have checked 300 cameras, and out of 300 cameras, 165 that are at the station. But the challenge that we're having at the station, Cape Town Station, all those cameras, we cannot record the footage. They are not recording. That's the problem that we're facing with those cameras in that area. Some of them, they are damaged in Park Station, I mean in Cape Town Station. What we have done, starting from, I think, this week, we have deployed 625 personnel from our personnel, private security, and the police to guard the burning of station. This exercise will continue for the coming 3 months to monitor the issue of burning station. We have instructed them that they must remove the hobos that are sleeping next to the railway. But now the challenge that we are having at the Strand Street in Cape Town, they are also sleeping there, but it's an area that is outside our area, at Strand Street. So there are also hobos that are sleeping there. Inside, they used to make fires there. So we have said that remove those people there, because there's chances that also they can be involved. We don't have proof they can be involved in the burning of trains. So this is as far as cameras are concerned in our deployment since after the burning of trains. Because this, the burning of trains, we have noticed that there's a pattern that every time when you come down to Western Cape, a train will burn. So we have intensified the deployment of personnel. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Through you, then there were questions around the basics that should be done around the stations, and they relate to the wall. Honorable De Freitas spoke about his visit to Olifantsfontein and technologies about cable theft. So I'll ask Tara to respond to those questions. And maybe just to Mr. Makura, perhaps hobo is not a kind word. They are homeless people.
My apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know whether I'm audible. Let me deal with firstly with the comment that was made by Honourable Member De Freitas around Park Station, where he mentioned that the station have 50% vacancies or even more of tenants. And I think I need to clarify, we are sitting at Park Station today at 5% vacancy. The national average in terms of the property industry is about 12%. I know as I'm sitting here, I can tell you where the vacancy is, because it's next to the offices where we, at Tumchanchi, I visit Park Station once or twice or thrice a week. So I know what is going on. So that information, I think, Honorable De Freitas, it's not correct. We can take you there. We can give you information today. Park Station is the best performing station at the moment. We generate more than 130 million per annum. And another thing that I need to clarify is that the rates that we charge in all our properties, it's required in terms of our own policy that gets audited on an annual basis by the AG, that we must get independent assessors and they give us a rate. We cannot charge a rate that is not market related. So for each and every lease that we sign, so we're not charging exorbitant rate, we're charging rates that are determined by the industry. So I thought that was important that I raise it. In terms of to deal with the basics, I think, honorable members, it's important that I give a bit of a background, because and it's not because we're trying to be defensive on the matter. If you look at the Western Cape today, we have 14 stations. I can mention them. Natrech, Levistown, Bonteville, Somerset, Phillip, Mutual, Goodwood, Thornton, Wenton, a number, 14 stations that currently do not have electricity. The reason for that, We replace the cable, it gets stolen. We replace the cable, we get stolen. We all know the challenges of the central line. As much as PRASA, there are areas where we are at fault, but also we need to have an appreciation of the communities and the society, what is happening within the society. These stations get vandalized every day. And I think I mentioned earlier on today that we're trying to fill a bucket that is full of holes. If you go to the Naledi line to Johannesburg, there's a station there, Nanfield. We renovated the station. We spent 12 million. We took there the minister, the MEC, and the board. The station was stripped by the community. Everything. We replaced the cable. They were stripped. The whole 12 million gone. And I think the community must have the appreciation of what we deal with on a day-to-day basis. We are not trying to come up with the excuses. We are trying to find a solution. Now for Natrek and Levistown and Bonteville, we are looking at putting anti-vandal proof electricity in terms of the solar. We try. That is a trial run that we're doing. We're going to check that. If it's working, then we're going to roll out to other stations. We are looking at everything possible. We have a big challenge as well of the manholes that are being stolen. We have changed the plastic. We've put concrete. They get stolen every day. The manholes are a problem because they are within the platform. The commuters fall in those manholes. And it is our priority to fix them. But they get stolen every day. We don't even know what they do. Because you put plastic, they steal the plastic ones. You put the concrete, they steal the concrete ones. We really do not know what is the use of those manhole covers. Those are the challenges that we deal with within the society. I think earlier on, I think it might have been Kevin who covered the issue of the fencing. There is a fencing program that is being handled, I think, by PRASA Tech or PRASA Rail. That is going to cover, tech. That is going to cover all the, I mean, we prioritize certain lines, station to station, where there's going to be fencing. So there is a program, there's CAPEX that has been, in some regions, they've even gone out on tender to close that. If we have to submit those numbers or the stations where we have moved, we will provide that information. So I think, yes, I'm not saying everything is 100%, but we need to have an appreciation of the challenges that we have, where some of the stations are located. We have stations that they don't even get vandalized. You go to PAL, for example, the PAL station, beautiful station, because nobody's vandalizing that station. Nobody, but if you look at the Central line, if you look at the Soweto line, if you look at the Tembisa line, it's a different environment altogether. A station in Irene is not going to be vandalized, but definitely a station that is in Soweto is going to be vandalized. A station that is in Denver, which is now the city center of Johannesburg, is going to be vandalized. So I think there must be that appreciation, and we're doing everything. I promised the chef committee that the issue of lighting is on my radar screen. It's on my radar screen. I check every week, but we have these challenges of the cable theft, electrical cable theft. You look at Kalkfontein, for example. There's a squatter camp next to the station. You fix the cable today, tomorrow it's gone. And if we have to provide information, how many service providers we have appointed, how much money we have spent to replace this cable, we can provide that information. Just wanted to check if I've covered everything. And on the issue of the cameras, for instance, Cape Town Station is a priority. I think Mr. Makura has covered it. We have about 1 to 24 platforms in total at Cape Town stations. From 1 to 9, the cameras are working. Platform 1 to 9, they are working. From number 20 to 24 are working. The challenge is between platform 10 to 19 that are not working. We've just appointed a service provider. This week, Richard. Yeah, we've appointed this week the service provider to fix all the cameras that are not working. So in the next 2 or 3 weeks, all the cameras at Cape Town Station would have been sorted. And then that will be followed by the Park Station ones.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, are there still questions that have not been answered?
Chair, the CEO will just wrap up on the issues that were raised around the irregular expenditure and all, and when he's doing that, he'll mop up everything else. We just need your guidance, Chair, on the RSR presentation, because we need to respond to that, which you said at the beginning of shortly after they had presented. So if Chair can guide us as to once the CEO has wrapped up, is that the stage we have prepared a small presentation that will address those issues that were raised in the RSR presentation.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to irregular spending and wasteful and fruitless expenditure, we are already processing the investigations that have been conducted, so that where there's a need for consequence management, we are already doing that. And I think we indicated in the last meeting that there are several phases that we are following. First phase is what is now being implemented. The second phase, which we'll deliberate on in the meeting of the board next week, is really to look into what further steps need to be taken. Ultimately, we want to go to a process where condemnation should happen, where we believe that we have exhausted the process. But equally, we have had meetings with National Treasury. They've guided us on and how some of these things need to be processed, especially in relation to GO contracts, because those GO contracts are the ones that constitute the majority of the irregular spending. Going forward, we are now developing a clear register of the element of irregular spending, so that we are able to monitor that. But not just monitor it, but begin to start investigations even before the end of the financial year, that is the 2018-2019 financial year, such that by the time we submit the next financials, we would have investigated those issues and can show progress to AG. We have developed a control a plan in terms of how we action remedies or remedial actions in respect of all the findings that have been made by the AG. Amongst others, they are in relation to asset management, work in progress. We are even beefing up our capacity to manage that. But equally, we have commissioned work to look at some assets that previously could not be accounted for. But through the report that has been produced, we now know where the assets are, especially in relation to components. And we are looking at how we can then recover those assets back to rail in particular, because there are assets that are critical to availability of train sets. Then there's an internal control framework that has already been approved that basically look at how do we strengthen structures of internal control within the organization. We have reviewed the risk framework and the structures that need to be embedded throughout the organization with respect to how we mitigate risks that have been identified. For example, one of the critical risks that is identified is the safety of passengers, but that's linked to if in fact we are not addressing safety issues, they relate very much to the permit itself. So we are really looking into how those are then dealt with. And hence, also in respect of RSR issues, we have taken a decision that this matter must now be centralized and be coordinated at the central level in the organization. But in particular, to also replenish resources that are needed to make it more effective and more responsive to issues that are raised by the RFR. But that also encompasses an integrated mechanism for reporting, because previously these issues were identified as rain-related, but we have since determined that there are other interdependencies. For example, rail is dependent on the price attack for a whole range of capital programs that are critical to resolving and closing out on some of the directives that have been made in the past. So I think we are now trying to de-silo basically the organization, but to find a way in which we deal with all fragmented approaches that have hitherto been characterizing the organization in the past. The others, Chair, will take them as recommendations. For example, what you've raised, that we must work with research institutions to innovate around particular problems that we are facing. We will obviously take up the issues in relation to CSIR, but equally to look into how we maximize on the research shares that we already have with some of the universities, including Stellenbosch University. I think that one will really take to heart in terms of taking it forward.
Chair, there was the question regarding Shifambo and the money that was paid to them. I'll just start by saying that we continue being in litigation on that matter, and then I'm going to ask Martha just to put on her legal head and just take us through that litigation process as well as the payments issue.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Yes, I think it's a question that was raised by Honourable Sibande. There is an amount of 2.6 billion that has been paid by PRASA. I guess in short, Chair, I may respond that to date we have not received any monies back from Sufambo. PRASA has instituted action again, requesting that money be paid by Sufambo. But obviously that being part of the court process, it still has not been done. So where we are currently is that on the 1st of November, the matter will proceed to the appeal court, where it will be heard, and we'll await the decision of the appellate division in that respect. But to date, the 2.6 billion that was paid by PRASA has not been repaid by Sufambo.
Okay, so after 20. Yeah. Honourable Members, can we go into the next presentation, 2017-18? Are there still issues that members would want to raise? Honourable Sibande, Honourable Hunsinger.
Chairperson, there is one question which was never responded to, which is as follows. The department tried to intervene between the two, which is PRASA and RSR, in terms of their dispute, in terms of the matter which was taken to court. And there was a recommendation, not a demand, but a recommendation that we should save some of the resources. My question was that recommendation implemented? If not, why not?
Chair, thank you. Sorry about that, Honourable Member. There were discussions over a number of days, and I will also ask Martha, because she was sitting that side when with the judge. There was some stage where I think the process had gone on that it couldn't be reversed.
So it's not as if we ignored it, or rather we chose not to take into account the department's effort to intervene. Actually, there was on both sides a willingness where BRASA was willing to drop the court action, and the RSR was also considering no longer implementing the revoking of the license. But unfortunately, it was, I should say, out of our hands, and even as we approached the judge to say we'll withdraw, they'll withdraw the revoking, but the judge wanted us to proceed. So maybe if you can say it in the proper language, Martha.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honourable members. I think, Chair, you've covered it succinctly. That is exactly what transpired in court when we did communicate to the judge that we rather remove this matter from the roll and we don't proceed with it because of the directives that have been given by the minister. The judge felt that he wanted to continue with the matter, and because the matter was in the realms of the court, it was already within his remit. So that's why he then suggested that we proceed. And I think on this reporting to our respective principals, it was then agreed that perhaps we proceed and finalize the matter as proposed by the judge to the satisfaction of both parties. So it was taken into consideration, and the judge was advised accordingly.
Honorable Humsinga.
Thank you, Chair, and being aware of the time that it's only three hours to go till midnight, I'll be quick. That's on a lighter note. I'm not serious. Chair, may I also add that a lot of the questions and the answers that was presented certainly contributed to a bigger understanding of the reality which a lot of officials and staff members have to deal with. Apart from the challenges around leadership, which seems to be a prolonged issue and an extended problem, because leadership issues have been with PRASA for many, many years. And I just want to recognize and acknowledge the hard work of officials and staff in PRASA who are really trying to do the best with what they have available. That being said, it doesn't leave us without continuing our role in terms of oversight function. So I've got a question to you, Mr. Nkochane. Thank you for giving us the facts and the figures. Numbers always appeal to me. And I have a general question. And firstly, as part of what you mentioned in the breakdown of the directives received, the ones closed, as you put it, and the one still open, as you put it. There was a particular one which you mentioned, head office, which is just strange to me. I want to understand it in terms of parallel to the directives issued in each province and then also on the mainline Shosholoza line. In understanding your role in driving that program, obviously to get as much directives addressed, closed, and happiness with the railway safety regulator, since there's 219 directives, already is like a track record built up over 8 years, because they come from 2010, as I understand. Now, they are, on average, 24% still open, of which 41% is in the Western Cape. It's nearly double on the average. So immediately my attention is drawn to the Western Cape and the number of directives in proportion to the other provinces, which are only four others, Western Cape, Gauteng, Eastern Cape and KZN, that you shared with us. So why such a nearly double the amount outstanding on average in the Western Cape than in the other provinces? Is there a particular issue? Is it because of, and I don't want to speculate, I'll leave it to you to give us solid answers of those, but in numbers and in terms of driving the program, it's just significant that nearly double the percentage of directors are still open in the Western Cape opposed to the average which you have achieved in addressing the directive since 2010 till now. I want to get to a specific mention around the cameras which were checked in Cape Town Station in particular. I know there's also issues about the monitoring of those cameras. So apart from equipment, it's also about the capacity of those cameras to record and for someone to actually monitor those images and react to whatever is observed over and above the increased capacity in terms of safety officials and so on, which is also increased, which we're all very grateful for. To what extent are those cameras such that they can be connected to a monitoring system, and to what extent do we have staff that are actually there monitoring these cameras? Because it takes seconds to light a couple of train seats and to see the whole coach burning, let alone a locomotive with fuel. If you could give us some insight there. And then talking of burning trains, the frustration at especially what we've experienced very close by Cape Town Station is that the immediate, apart from addressing the crisis after a train has burnt in the station, there's also an anxiety of escalating circumstances and the necessity, therefore, to get the train back back on track so that you can continue the service. So, therefore, it's a crime scene, it's closed off, it's subject to investigation. However, that forensic unit is located in Port Elizabeth, Nelson Mandela Bay. And how far is this discussion and conversation with SAPS to get a unit of some sort and the capacity where the highest frequency of this type of crime occurs, namely in Cape Town? It is of utmost importance that we have this conversation. We've been driving it from our side in each and every occasion and opportunity. How far is this discussion from your side? And how far is it that we can actually see a satellite forensic unit coming closer to where the frequency of these occurrences are at highest, which is in Cape Town? Because to get the service running again is important for the local PRASA service, because it places a lot of stress on them because they've got to keep everything on hold subject to the investigation that can just be prolonged and prolonged and prolonged. So that's really important to us. And is there such a conversation with SAPS, and how far are we from seeing a satellite service? Then also SAPS presence and police station reporting facilities, to what extent are we offering a service to commuters to be able to report instances? Because there's also an increasing occurrence of things that happen on trains that people just don't feel like reporting because it goes nowhere. And that is a particular service element that we need to jack up. It's part of the reputation which which you as an entity carry, and that can re-establish trust in a very significant way. If it's not part of a conversation or objective, I would really recommend and suggest that. Thank you, Chair.
Can we, Honourable Siari, and then we'll get the responses, short and concise responses.
Thanks, Chair. Quickly, from the responses, especially on the basics, I hear an attitude that says the board must appreciate challenges that are there within the community, and therefore subject to correction, and therefore appreciate those challenges, appreciate that there's vandalism, and keep quiet. Because from that report, I see an organization that is raising up their hands to say there are these challenges, we're frustrated, and there's nothing we can do. Because what I wanted to hear is, yes, they've observed these challenges, they are real, and what is the intervention plan? We have our own intelligence to check why is there no vandalization this side and there is vandalization this side. Maybe it's related to what the chairperson was saying, that let us work with research institutions to research as to what is it happening. Why are they stealing these things? Why are they vandalizing? Last week when we met, I think we raised an issue of are we not as an organization contributing towards that behavior? Because trains that are coming late, trains that are not reliable, and therefore the community gets angry because our systems are not in place. So what I want to hear is an intervention plan in that regard, because I don't think functionaries can raise up their hands and say, you portfolio committee, please appreciate that there is vandalism in this community and that community and that community. Therefore, there's nothing we can do, because as a portfolio committee, we can't keep quiet. For as long as you are there, for as long as you are still employed there, for as long as the minister has appointed the board there, we can't keep quiet, because those people that are suffering are our constituencies as politicians. And when we go there, especially next year, we're going for elections. We must go there and campaign. And they will ask us those questions. What are you doing? This BRASA challenges this one, this one, this one. So I won't appreciate that attitude to say, the committee, please appreciate, we're frustrated, and therefore understand that there's vandalism, but we don't get an intervention plan as to how do we move forward. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we get responses from yourself, Chairperson, and the team?
There were some direct questions that were asked to Mr. Ngujane, as well as Mr. Makura. So if you can address those from Honorable Nsinga, and then we will address the rest of the questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. First of all, I must thank the Honorable Member for really appreciating the work that we're doing as BRASA employees. I've been with this company for 21 years, working under difficult conditions. Thank you very much. I'm also one of the lucky employees because I've been working with the Office of the Regulator since it was established. I've seen their CEOs come and go. Let me respond to the first question, Honorable Member, in terms of the head office. As you know, we've got the head office of BRASA Rail. Therefore, that office as well is audited on an ongoing basis in terms of the safety management system, that we have our legislated meetings, that we submit documents on time. So those six directives were mainly focusing on the activities of the Office of the Nominated Manager. The second question, Honorable Member, is focusing on the Western Cape. When Nkululeko Boya was still the CEO of the regulator, there was an intensive inspection that we did together with him. We came down here, we walked the line, we took a trolley, all the lines, even checking where the gangs are working with the punya, right? And therefore, there was a lot of findings in terms of the infrastructure. And so far, we are still struggling to close some of those directives here in the Western Cape vis-a-vis the infrastructure, because you need the on-track machines to come and work on the payway itself in terms of screening the line, in terms of temping the line. So most of them are on infrastructure. Therefore, the provision of funding in order to address this is one of those that we are following up with our head office to make sure that we provide the necessary resources for the Western Cape to close those findings. Thank you.
Before the next response, in terms of what RSR has said, is that you get informed that there are non-compliant issue on this and this and this area. You don't act on that, and you're telling us stories here. We want to hear the actuals as to why did you not act to an extent that RSR has to say enough is enough. Now we are withdrawing the safety permit. You can't tell us what you're saying is stories, bedtime stories actually. We're not interested in bedtime stories. Tell us exactly what is it that you did in terms of those, because if you had done something, not acknowledging and responding to what they raise, but acting on what they are raising, we wouldn't be where we are, where to an extent that you end up both of you in court. We still have a long way to go. We can spend the whole night dealing with that, because that is where the crux of the matter is.
Honorable member, unfortunately, I was not here when the presentation was done by the Office of the Regulator. But I hear they've raised...
But let me stop you right there. The Office of... what is contained in the court order are some of the issues that the Office of the Regulator raised. And you can't give us that kind of an excuse.
Okay, Chairperson, let me go through the issue of the court order. First of all, it was not our aim to go to court. We've tried all avenues. We've tried sitting down with the Office of the Regulator. At some stage, we had to go and wait at their offices. And some of our employees...
No bedtime stories, please.
Yes, some of our employees...
Let's get to the crux of the matter.
We're told where to go. Let's go to the first one, Chairperson, the one that deals with the costed HR plan. That information has been submitted to the Office of the Regulator. Not once, not twice, all the time when they need it, we give it to them. Number two, that we are not permitted to bring our new fleet into operation. Yes, that one is a standing item. All the time when we bring the new trains or introduce a new designed door, we go through the process of no objection. We submit our submittals through the Office of the Regulator and they approve. And we are going to do the same with the new fleet. We are busy doing the commissioning in one of the lines in Pretoria. We are focusing on adding the other four. We are going to submit for no objection. The other issue, Chairperson, deals with making sure that the Office of the Regulator, when they issue directives in terms of assets that they deem unfit, we said we want to make it a point that they use qualified personnel. Like, for example, let me give you the issue of signaling. You cannot use any other person. You must bring a qualified signal engineer to do the inspections. We agree with the Office of the Regulator. We will do that and make it a point that when they say this asset is unfit, it must be proved by a qualified engineer. Number six is the issue of an integrated asset condition assessment. We will provide it. We have some of the information. We are busy consolidating in terms of the overhead and in terms of telecoms. And the deadline for that is the 1st of March 2019. And we will meet the deadline as instructed by the court. The other one is the costed maintenance. The deadline is November 2018. And that information will be submitted to the RSR and to the court. The other one deals with the electronic interlocking in terms of the procurement plan. In fact, that's where RSR makes its money. So we will give them the procurement plan itself. The deadline for that is the 30th of this month. So we will make the information available on the date. Honourable Member,
thank you very much. Thank you very much. You are not helping the situation.
Why?
And let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Group CEO, Mr. Sabisa, can you please rescue us from this ordeal?
Thank you, Chair. I think from our side, we want to acknowledge that in as much as we have responded and closed some of the directives, but there's a lot of improvement that's still required. And two, I believe that it will be unhelpful for us as an organization that is CASA to adopt an adversarial sort of approach to issues that are raised by our colleagues at RSR, as though the issues that they are raising are not important or are irrelevant to us. On the contrary, we believe that we have a common perspective that safety is critical, and as I've indicated, is one of the number one risk issues that CASA is actually having. And therefore, it is incumbent upon us to find one another, to work more closer with RSR in terms of what needs to be done to resolve some of the outstanding issues. But equally, I think since we've started identifying these issues, there's a lot of budget allocations that we've done to really respond to issues that are really, really critical to the issues that RSR is actually identifying. In fact, we have a whole a report that is going to FCIP, that is our finance committee, tomorrow, basically, that looks at how we move certain fundings that have been allocated on certain things to things that are regarded as mission critical, and that also respond to the safety permit conditions. But equally, we want to indicate that at the levels at which this relationship has been managed, clearly there are challenges, and hence we are elevating the management of the relationship to my level as well as the CEO of RSR. And in fact, I've even asked Dr. Sithole to be my intermediary, basically, to make sure that really there aren't sticking points that are relationship related that then find expression in the way in which we conduct the granting or otherwise of the permit. We will also respond to all the issues that are in the special conditions, because even though, you know, they are now part of the court process, but it's something that we have already committed ourselves to. For example, we have already allocated 33 million for these safety critical positions, And I've asked the team that if in fact we do require other resources towards this end, we then need to go back and look what additional resources are actually needed. But on the other hand, manual authorization, I think, has been an issue. We acknowledge that it's been increasing, but with the interventions that we have put in place, especially in the last 3 weeks, that what Ms. Mareka reported today is that we have now closed up on the issues of signaling, especially where the accident happened, through the work that is done by Siemens. And we think that Siemens will also assist us in respect of other outstanding matters. We will closely monitor these issues on a monthly basis. We will develop monthly reports, which I think are due on the 5th of each month. And those reports will be countersigned by myself as well as the CEO rate, so that on the issues that we believe are critical for conformance or complying with the special conditions, those are then regulated precisely. We also said that at our level, really, we need to even not just formalize relationship, but equally be able to talk, even on an informal basis, on issues that are critical to both of us, so that we have a better understanding of what is required and the things that can be managed jointly, because there are instances where RSR will have resources that can inform what better is to be done at the level of class. But as we indicated, the board is also taking in keen interest. These matters will also be closely monitored, and the board will play its oversight in relation to how we are managing these issues. Obviously, all of us are now accountable for making sure that none of the conditions are not implemented without just cause, you know. So I think that's all reasonable steps, all resources, as far as possible, will be allocated to this.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, and oral members, I think what is very important here is that which we need to take stock of is the willingness of the two parties to work together. I think for me, a meeting that we held on the 9th with both Chairperson and the board and the CEO was more relevant. The one that happened on the 11th by the judge just confirmed what we said should happen. For me, that was quite important, that these two bodies, these two entities, whose shareholder is one, the Minister of Transport, are willing to work together without compromising their mandate. For me, that was very important. So I think the least that the regulator has sent to PRASA to implement, I said to them in that meeting, I want to have a similar meeting with them by the end of November to check whether they are doing it or not. I do not want to see the entities that belong to our department being told by the court of law what to do. Yet they are able to discuss these things under one roof, and they can agree without the court of law. So for me, I think that was quite a very more achievement that we made with these two entities. So we will just have to see the working together, and I'm very pleased that they have started working together on those issues. So I could no doubt that we are going to turn the corner, and all these issues that were raised by the regulator here are going to be addressed. We are going to be monitoring that as a shareholder department, and making sure that all these things that were raised on a day, on the 9th, as well as confirmed by the judge on the 11th, are being adhered to, so that we save lives and also make sure that people are not disadvantaged, especially the working poor and the working class. So we'll make sure that we do that as a shareholder department. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Clarissa and Mr. Sithole. The other outstanding questions which were asked, if you can be able to respond so that we are able to move forward.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were two questions that we raised. The first one, it was the issue of the cameras, if the cameras are being manned. Yes, those cameras, these people that are manning, they are working shift, 8 per shift at here at Cape Town, but the challenges that I've already mentioned of the recording part, they are not recording, and then you cannot even zoom. But as Tara have said, that they are going to replace those cameras and fix them. The other issue, Chairperson, is the issue of the forensic part or the investigation capacity from the police. My understanding, I don't know, I was in Cape Town 5 years ago. There was a plateau-proof forensic building. I'm not sure if it's taking care of the banning of train. So I'm told that it's not. But if you look at the rail police, I just want to talk about it. The rail police, they also have a challenge. They don't have even capacity. I'm talking about the rail police now. They don't even have capacity on forensic. They don't even have capacity on investigation. I'm talking this comparing with the old railway police prior 1986. Prior 1986, the railway police that were there at that time, they were having the horse unit, they were having the mobile unit, they were having the crowd control, bomb explosives that they were dealing with that time, and we don't have. They were having a unit that deal only with investigation and even forensic. But when you compare today, those that the police that they are having today at the rail environment, they don't have that capacity. And even the number, comparing our number, the number of internal security, private security, and even the rail police, if you compare the number prior 1986, they were around about over 12,000 that time. And us were around about, together with the railway police presence, we were around about 9,000 to 10. We are not so many. So when we do this, the police, they don't have that capacity. That is why even when we come here, I don't even want to talk about the police when coming to deployment, because, I mean, also they have also a challenge. We need to look into, even if you force them to come and deploy. They don't deploy to that maximum the way prior 1986. We have to look the way they were deploying that time and now. And look, I mean, compare apples with apples, and then we do the same thing that they were doing. They were doing a good job, you know. Like we struggle with crowd control. If people that are invading our area, we have to struggle to get the police. They have to wait for the crowd control. We don't have that capacity of crowd control. They don't even have that. So I'll follow up the issue of whether we can make an agreement with them coming to the fast-tracking the forensic part. But also they have to go to intent to the major police force outside there, because they are not doing any investigation. Our investigation are done at the station. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Hunsinga.
Thank you, Chair. My question is very specific, very direct. Is there a conversation around having a forensic unit in Cape Town? And I want to underline the necessity and importance thereof. What happened in history is past. We need to find solutions going forward. My point is quite clear. It's a frustration to Cape Town Plaza staff, because they have the important assignment to re-establish services as quick as possible. They are restrained in that it's a crime scene which they have to cordon off. It builds frustration with commuters, and it can lead to escalating reoccurrence and spread of violence. So all I'm saying is there a conversation? How far is that conversation? And that it's really important to have a unit locally, since the highest frequency of these burnings are currently in Cape Town.
Honorable Sibande, I thought, Honorable Hunsinga, you also impress upon the meeting that was there between the Portfolio Committee on Police and what really transpired in that meeting, because there was a number of issues that the police raised in relation to what exactly is happening. Besides the cameras, there were other issues that they have raised
particularly focusing on what you have just said.
Thank you, Chair. That was on the 15th of August, not too long ago.
Honorable Sibande.
Chairperson, I wanted to comment and also to propose that we proceed. You see, Chairperson, about the issue of cameras. The report said that they've got all over 300 cameras and with their breakdowns that in Cape Town they've got most cameras. You see, what is a worrying factor is that there is a quite different, I repeat again, between a theory and practical. We do have cameras. The question is, if we're doing an introspection, are they cameras or is cheap? What is their value? Where do they help us? I don't think that those are cameras. You know, Chairperson, I think we were dealing about a very sensitive matter whereby, as we indicated, not to say that we are happy if even some of you, and according to the reports that there are cases where they are stabbing people, injuring people, and worse, injuring the securities. No, we're not happy. But most of the time, help us so that we can be able to empower you. Why I'm saying that, Chairperson? Because what is the key fundamental question is that we must have all systems in place. What must be clear is that they must also tell us, because in the past what normally used to happen, some people they put some of the gadget and instrument and expected to be paid, only to find that the special security company sitting there getting money while they put in fake. That must be looked as well, because what I'm scared of most is financial implication. And to me, my recommendation is that maybe the relevant people to relook the issue of the cameras, where we get rid of these present cameras and that particular company. Because I'm scared, Chairperson, I repeat my feeling again. We might be paying a certain person, certain individual, owning those cameras while they are not working. And earlier on, I indicated the issue of maintenance. And also, I've raised the issue of aging equipment. The current environment need advanced instruments. I'll repeat again. The current environment, it needs an advanced instrument. Why should we keep equipment which is not relevant to the task? So, Chairperson, let me put there and then propose, as I indicated, that we proceed to the next one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Quick responses to the issues, some just comments.
Honorable Chair, I just want to respond specifically to Honorable Hansinger on whether the issue of creating the forensic capability for fires in the Western Cape has been taken up. It has been taken up on a number of platforms with SAPS and even with the involvement with the MEC of Department of Transport in meetings with SAPS as well. And recently, when we were briefed in the Safety Advisory Committee by the head of the detectives, Jeremy Vieri, this was also confirmed that this issue is being looked at by SAPS, where this capability is being looked at. But what has been agreed on in the interim, in the event of us having fires, they will expedite the activation of the team to come and assist from SAP side either from Gauteng or from the Eastern Cape, so that the delay, there's no long lead time for that team to respond to the incidents in the Western Cape. But the issue of creating the capability will solve the problem, and that's being raised with SAPS already.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the next presentation. Megwayama.
Thank you, Chair. This is the 2017-18 annual report. If you can go to the first slide. You haven't moved. Thank you. I believe it has been distributed. But while he's struggling with the screen, this is the 2017-18 annual report. And Chair, similar to the previous one that we presented, our term started in April of 2018, but we do take responsibility and have signed off on these annual financial statements as well as the annual report. It also takes place in the same type of background, where the leadership changes continued into 2017-18, and even more startling is the fact that between May and October of 2017, there was no board at BRASA. Revenues continued to decline, and the performance, just as you will see once the financial the CFO goes into the detail, continued going south, and further reflection of an organization in crisis. This is the period where we saw a number of projects being put on hold or suspended, which has had a major impact on the capital program. In the Western Cape, as has been discussed quite intensively even during the questions and answer session, is that we saw several sets being destroyed and satellite and rendered unserviceable. There were also floods in KwaZulu-Natal, which resulted in a closure of train services during October of 2017. And the mainline passenger service also had a major accident which resulted in 24 fatalities near Kroonstad. This was in the beginning of 2018, which resulted in loss of commuter and passenger confidence. I think when we do go into the discussion area, we can maybe via CEO and Dr. Stolle and Martha just touch on some of the engagements that we have had with those families, because I think from Parliament's perspective, there is also an interest in knowing whether BRASA does actually reach to communities and families just to demonstrate caring during these accidents. Chairperson and honourable members, during this period under review, there were three main areas which were key factors in the performance of the group. We saw personnel costs rising quite significantly from 12,000 to 17,000, which also puts a heavy burden on the entity because it's not matched by corresponding increase in service levels and revenue. The operating funding model, which also you will see when you do invite us to come and talk about our turnaround or get back on track rescue strategy, we do say that there is some interventions that are required in this regard. Then an ambitious capital program that has further maintenance and other costs that were being incurred under operational expenditure continued putting a strain on the results. What obviously makes this a major issue is that these additional costs are not funded through an additional allocation of the operational subsidy, leading to a further decline in the financial performance. So at the end of this, CEO is going to reprimand me because I did what should have been his presentation, but I think it just, by way of background, just points out to the fact that while we have succeeded in restoring governance at BRASA, we are still in 2017-18 inheriting an entity that continued to feel the strain of lack of leadership, of lack of controls. At this stage, I'm going to hand over to between the CEO and the CFO to go into the detail on the financial overview for 2017-18. Chair, if you could allow me to apologize on behalf of the directors that had to leave us, because one was catching an international flight that would have been a terrible cost to recover. And Director Tsepe had a small child sitting at home because her husband has gone out of town on another matter. So she had to get back home. So it's Director Jenny who had to leave. But the board still remains. Director Wesi is behind me. Director Matlala is still here. And the executive complement is still here. None of the executives have left. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I and the honorable members, I will go through the financial overview for 2017-18 financial year. The group, the BRASA Group, has posted a comprehensive loss of 925 million compared to prior year of 928 million, which actually shows a slight improvement of 3 million, really. But there have been contributing factors to the declining performance. And the first one is the declining levels of revenue by 14% from the previous financial year, where we had 2.9 billion the previous year to 2.5 billion, 2018. This has actually, our fare revenue continued to decline from 2.3 billion to 1.7 billion, a reduction of 553 million. For the year. This negative variance was slightly offset by improved rental income of 144 million. The operating subsidy also contributed positively with an increase of 14% from 5.2 billion to 5.9 billion. The operating expenditure decreased, though, by 1% from 10.6 billion to 10.5 billion. However, there have been material increases that were incurred in some of the expenditure lines. These were insurance claims, which shows an increase in expenditure of 33%. The previous year, they were at 486, and this 2017-18 financial year, 648, a difference of an increase of 162 million. And again, maintenance expenditure also doubled with an increase of, almost doubled with an increase of 82% or 219 million rand. As a result of additional maintenance of new trains. I think the insurance claim suggests to qualify that it's with all the incidents that we have been having, that actually it's, you can actually see the effect that is causing on our insurance claims. All right, next slide. The next slide actually shows that BRASA has been, if you look at that, perhaps let me start with the first block right down the red one. That is our fare revenue. I'm going to just talk through that slide because it depicts something in it. And then the next one is our revenue, is our rental income. The next, the blue, and then the movers. Hopefully, I've got the right of this. The other income. Our other income is always insurance recoveries, the cater recoveries. It's made up of smaller recoveries in there. And then we have got the green one, which is our subsidy. And then right on top there, that is finance income, the interest that is earned. The slides itself, if you look at the revenue of the company itself, which is actually made of the fair revenue, the red bar right at that there, and I think it's important just to pick up the fair revenue, because that is going to be actually what makes the difference in here. If you look at the fair revenue from 2010-11, has been slightly increasing up to about 2015, a slight increase, and all of a sudden you see a decline, and it's been continuing well and showing that decline with all the challenges, actually showing all the challenges that the rail, especially rail, has been actually experiencing. I think that is it. In that page, perhaps to talk about less, it doesn't matter, don't even go back. And I think the operating rental income has been increasing by 531 million from the previous financial year to the 2018-8 financial year. The next slide is just showing our comprehensive income, land income statement, which I've actually spoken to it. And there is the decline of the fair revenue there of the 24% from year to year, but it has been depicting that, especially that and rental income. You can see the increase over there. Okay, Sipho, let's go. The operating, again, looking at the operating, we have touched on the operating expenditure. Again, the line of the insurance claim, where despite that they almost we have experienced the same expenditure from 2017 and 2018. But if you look at the insurance claim, there's been an increase of 33%. Which actually shows a negative, that increase of on the expenditure line. And the maintenance due to the new rolling stock, there has been an increase there of 82%. Perhaps just to talk about the second percentage of total. If you look at that percentage of total, the employee benefits, again, they show a 52% of the total expenditure that is there, 52% is actually spent on the employee benefits. I'll talk about that on the next slide. Just right now, the cost drivers there, these are our key cost drivers, which I've actually picked again, where we have got the employee benefits. And then the other portion is actually shared on the other expenses, looking at the energy expenses, the next big one, insurance claim showing a slight increase again. I think the personnel cash, though there has been an increase on the personnel cash, this particular graph actually shows us that when we're doing benchmarking with other operators, they actually show that if you look at that bar line, we are not actually the rail, the southern rail, especially metro rail. It's they're almost the same elsewhere, and which actually leaves very little for other to find the other expenditure for the business. This is a benchmarking, a slide. That is actually we extracted to compare with either iceberg in here and the case, and that actually that's what has been happening right throughout the operators, the rail operators. Looking at the financial, despite the poor performance, again, I must mention that the balance sheet of BRASA is in a healthy state. I'll probably have to talk to the balance sheet. The asset base has increased by 10% from 67 billion to 73.6 billion. There have been, during the year, we had received 9 new trains from Gibela at a cost of 1.9 billion. The cash equivalent again has shown an increase of 13.9 billion, almost the same as the previous year, because that is actually marked for capital projects. The cash available really for operations have been nil, and the question that always comes up, I think it's important to raise that, because the board will always ask, how do you finance the other things? Because the expenditure is keeping on being the same. There have been, a lot of it has been financed by not paying, not servicing our creditors. And we have been having the interest that we actually have been receiving from the money invested in respect of the unspent capital grant. What is important to note is the equity on our balance sheet has actually been depleted by the accumulated losses that we have been incurring. Okay. Again, if you look at our property, I think, again, this particular graph, it depicts our total assets, how they look like. Okay, but... And our total liabilities. I suppose the total liabilities, I think I do want to... Again, let me start from the beginning where we have got the equity, where it actually is on... It has gone to the negative, the 840. I do want to highlight the capital subsidy over there. It's important to note here, whether we say that it's a liability because of the way that we account for it, but that's why we say the balance sheet is healthy, because in reality that capital subsidy is not a liability as such, but it's until we spend it, then we start amortizing that amount. Okay. I think the highlights and lowlights for 2017-18, again, I think I'm just repeating myself, the 9 new trains from Gibela that we received, the growth in the asset base of 10%, this year, again, 2017-18, we receive a qualified audit opinion. The audit opinion, I will touch base, I will go back to that, because I think it's important just to expand a little talking about the audit opinion. The irregular expenditure for the current that has actually been spent this, but the 2017-18 financial year, it is 4 billion. The previous year for that particular year, it was 4.9 billion that was incurred, mainly because of our legacy contracts that we have been having. These have not been condoned. We will always talk about the amount of, which is actually shown on our balance sheet, the total of actually of our... I do want to explain this again. It's the total of the irregular expenditure. If you look, for example, on page, unfortunately, I haven't picked up, but I thought it's important to explain because this question has come up, where you look on page 140 of the annual report itself, the 2017 shows a total of irregular expenditure of 20 billion. And the current year shows 24.2. It's mainly of the brought forward that have not been condoned, because we will do condonement once those contracts have expired. But for the particular year, the amount was 4 billion for this 2017-18 that was incurred in 2017 specific and the previous year, the 4.9. I think that one I need. Again, it will be, you will see the same, because we have not condoned, because we are still going to comply with all the disciplinary actions and all the investigation and apply for condonement. And once these contracts for the irregular expenditure, which we most of them are expiring the following year, 2019, therefore we will be able to do condonement of those. Right, to note the contingent liabilities there of 979 for the current year compared to previous year of 861, and the estimated loss of as a result of train accidents and other events after balance sheet, we are looking at 217. I promise, just to go back on the qualification that we have received, because despite, I think it's important just to go through some of the, what has been the irregular expenditure. We had the property, plant and equipment, which was mainly the WIP, which is not in here, but it's in the report of the audit. We signed our AG report already, where we have the property, plant and the equipment. And we have the property, plant and equipment. There have been some assets. I think we have touched on the assets and some of this, where they cannot be traced. And obviously, the record management has been one of our challenges to actually get. Therefore, the AG could not really satisfy themselves of the evidence of some of this. The fire revenue, we have been, because of the system, we have had a problem of our system which was not working. Therefore, they were not able to reconcile the figures. I must report back that they have, from this financial year, on the 20th of September 2018, the maintenance contract of the system, this was the actual ticketing system, has actually, that maintenance contract has been extended. Therefore, it's very, very recent, just to see how it operates moving forward. But at least we have got a contract in place in that respect to address that. And the trade and other receivable, I do want to raise this one, because it was during the audit was one of the bone of contention with the AG itself, but there was an 838.8 million, which was an operational subsidy which we have not yet received from DOT by end of the financial year. And because we have to recognize some expenses on that, therefore we had to match the revenue with the related expenses. That operational subsidy was meant actually for expenses, the related expenses, marked for the related expenses. I had a couple of communication with the CFO of the OT and the action they have taken on that day. Therefore, we do expect something will be happening on that, related to that. Therefore, I think I must mention that one, because that was one of the areas we had. Chair, I think I'm done. Thank you so much,
Chair.
Okay.
I will proceed with the broad performance overview of the organization. I think it's important to highlight that the organization in the period under review performed far worse than we have actually on average performed. We only achieved 21% of our predetermined objectives. This is closer to what the organization basically achieved in 2013 financial year, which was at around 19%. This obviously has got a major impact on service delivery as a whole. In respect to divisional performance, we are also seeing a major decline in terms of customer service rating from 70% in the last 5 years on average to 52% in the last financial year. This is also informed by the decline in the number of trains that were available. We were running a set of 200, which is 50% or so less than what we actually required at 256 sets. The on-time performance also declined. To 68.3%, and the number of cancellations that were experienced in the period under review were at 13%. Autopex also performed on average with 90 buses at some point against 517 fleet that is supposed to be available. But even with that, there were some improvements to about 990 buses, but still most buses were defective. This lack of fleet availability was a major contributor to the decline or reduction in revenue collected with respect to Autopex. PrasaCres achieved about 50% of its objectives, and PrasaTech achieved 27% of its objectives. The further expression or indication of this performance is manifested when we look at specific objectives that were set for the period under review. With respect to objective one, which was to improve customer experience, all indicators there are on a downward slope. For example, customer satisfaction rating per annual survey that was done was sitting at 56%. Basically a variance of 12.86%. Similarly, rail passenger injuries and fatalities per million passengers increased to 7.6% as against the target of within the range of 3.3 to 4.3. So which really indicates 76.74% increase there. Rail public injuries and fatalities per million passengers also increased to 2.33 as opposed to the range of 1.4 to 1.6, which is a variance of 45.63%. Schedule 1 crime incidents involving passengers, we also see an increase there to 592 as opposed to the range target that was set of 438 to 570, which is a variance of 3.6%. On objective number 2, which is dealing with improving rail systems performance, we also see that this has also declined, and I think even in the first indicator, commuter coaches in service, that actually declined to 2,407 by year end, whereas the target was to have between 3,319 to 3,681 by year end. And the variance there is minus 27.48%. Metro commuter fleet meantime between failure also declined, and here it's actually 3.556 days between failures by year end, as opposed to an indicator of 4.8 to 5.2 days between failures by year end. So this is accounted for by a range of factors, some of which we have already been talking about, the vandalism that has happened in the period, non-availability of critical mission critical maintenance specific components and material due to I think these were because of contracts that were cancelled and so on and so forth. We also see that there has not been a long-term contract for rotating machines and wheel refurbishment. Still on objective number two, the really indicator that where we improved was in relation to Pairway, where the achievement there was 42.4 hours by year end, which was quite better than the target that was set. But the rest in relation to electrical signal, kilometer of speed restrictions, all those indicators indicate that we were operating below what we have targeted. And there are various measures that are suggested to address these issues. For example, earlier it was indicated that in particular for Western Cape, the issue of on-track machines needs to be acquired just as much as there needs to be a replacement of road rail vehicles as part of maintenance. So we are looking also at the review of SLA between us and ESCOM regarding the security of supply of electricity to expedite maintenance, but also to procure critical substations and components thereof. The signaling issues is also expected to restore some integrity. What we indicated there is that there are decisions to procure spares, which, as we indicated earlier, have largely been achieved, especially with respect to Gauteng region through the contract with Siemens. Then with regard to the general overhauls of Metro Rail coaches, we achieved 409 coaches by the year end, which is obviously an improvement of about 17% in respect of the target of 349 to 42 by year end, but obviously far lesser than what we achieved in the corresponding period in 2016-2017. For mainline passenger services, the number that we achieved was 56% by year end, which is a decrease of 8.20%. And this against 81% that was achieved in 2016-2017 financial year. The on-time performance also declined, just as much as paying passengers trips also declined, for both Metrorail as well as mainline passenger services. The numbers are quite significant in the sense that the variances are at 28.90% and 21.04% respectively. The reasons that are attributed to some of these are highlighted in the bullet points below this table. And I think what we have not indicated before are really related to flooding in KZN, but also a shortage of locomotives leased from Transnet, especially in respect of Eastern Cape. Then on Autopass long distance passengers transported, this also declined to 1.8 million, which is a decline of about minus 27% as a variance. So here it means that we were operating less buses, and therefore this has had an impact on our overall revenue. Autopax took steps to review, ticket prices to be aligned with the budget in order to try and break even. The number of buses released from the vehicle off the road list covers about 95% of the budgeted service, which will have now a positive impact on revenue and passenger numbers. On the National Station Improvement Project completed, this really declined to 17 projects as opposed to 45 projects in the corresponding period in 2016. A significant decline of minus 57.50% as a variance. And also in respect of workplace improvement projects completed, we only achieved 13% by year end. 13 projects, as opposed to the target of 18 to 22 projects. And you can see that in the previous financial year, we completed 20 projects. Most of these issues are attributed to delays in the procurement processes, the bid committees that were either non-existing or that were not meeting regularly as necessary. But this is also attributed to the delays as a result of approval from Transnet Freight Rail for site access. For fair revenue in respect of Metrorail, MPLS, and as indicated by the CFO, we see that there was also a decline in fair revenue by about 550.9 million. So I will go to the other one. On the objective number three, which is a realignment of support function to achieve an efficient rail business through integration, we also see that the targets that have been achieved were far less than what was set for the period. For example, regarding productivity in respect of revenue, excluding a subsidy per employee, this declined to about 165,259 by year end, whereas the target was just above 246,000, or between 246,000 to 263, and the variance there was minus 32%. The actual operational expenditure, we also see that the target was 9.8 billion, but this actually increased to 10.47 billion, which is an increase of 6.72%. Overall, as indicated, revenue of CASA was 30% below the budgeted numbers for the financial year. Furthermore, the anticipated savings through reduction in personnel in particular did not materialize. On the operating expenditure side, savings projected on the corporate plan were also not actually realized, leaving a budget shortfall of 1.928 billion before depreciation, amortization, and net income. The expenditure has savings of 907 million or 8% when compared to the budgeted expense. Just quickly on the objective for modernizing the rail system through the 73 billion over 10 years investment program. The target was to receive 6 to 7 sets of new trains by the end of 2017-2018, and here we actually achieve 7 sets by the year end. With regard to the central traffic center building completion, this was actually not achieved as indicated. The completion level was 83% as opposed to completing that project completely. On the signaling interlocking completed, we only achieved 13 as opposed to targets of between 32 to 48 signal interlocking commissions completed by the year end. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I will try to expedite the issues. I think on objective number five, that's what we achieved. We wanted to do an environmental impact assessment there, which was actually achieved by year end. On the exploitation of assets to generate additional revenue, the station number of stations that were completed were below targets, and in respect of all the indicators that we said, we also did not achieve those. Yeah, then with regard to the a gross lettable area. I think this has consistently performed very well. And it looks like we are letting more of our properties that are available. And we are also above our targets. And with respect to the National Stations Upgrade Project, we completed 12 projects, which is also within the range of 12 to 18 projects. But when looked at against 2016-2017, it's lower, where we achieved 16 projects completed. Yeah, the last one really is on the station modernization projects completed. Here the target was to do two, and we did not achieve any. Similarly, in respect of property construction with private developers, the target was between one and two stations, and again we did not achieve that target. On the last one really is what has been done to address some of these issues. I think the focus really is on arresting the decline, focusing on the reliability and availability of train sets to improve customer services, but also fixing misaligned and fragmented organizational structure to drive efficiencies and effectiveness in terms of the deployment of resources. We are also looking at really bringing organizational stability and adhering to a strict governance sort of precepts. And we are then frustrating issues that are related to modernization, and in particular addressing matters of project management, which has meant that we are not in keeping with some of the readiness programs that have been set. And the board has set up various committees to deal with specific mandates and the objective that has been set by the entity. And finally, we are dealing with issues related to irregular expenditure and also the institution of disciplinary processes that we reported on last week. That chair is a summary of the annual report for 2017-2018.
Thank you very much. Can we get members? Are there other matters that you want to raise, Chairperson, before I give to the members to engage with the presentation? Honorable Humsinga, from Honorable Humsinga up to Honorable Sithole. Up to Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. If we can start off on page 5. On page 5, you mention on the first bullet point that personnel cost, and then you say number of employees has risen from 12,000 to 17,000. Is this referring to the number of staff? In other words, are you telling us that you've increased your staff with 5,000 in one financial year? How must I read this? Because what is stated there, this is how I am reading it. Or is it a multi-year, but it doesn't say so.
Over the last number of years.
How many number of years? Where is the table to break it up into years so that I can make sense of this increase and to align it to what you present in another place on the report in terms of rand value added to that? Then I would like to get some clarity on the fee revenue decline.
There's a nice graph that you pointed out, and you identified it correctly that at a certain stage, which appears to be 2014-15, there was a break point in decline. Why did we have a decline? Do you have the research, or did you explore reasons for that? And what is the turnaround strategy related to that finding in the research to then take the trajectory back to where it historically has derailed? Then on, if we could go to page 10, if you like. On page 7, which relates to page 10, at the bottom of page 7, if we can start there, or slide 7, you say maintenance expenditure almost doubled with an increase of 82%, or a difference, as I take it, of 290 million as a result of additional maintenance of new trains. Could we go to the table on slide number 10? Chair, if you'll allow me to come to the screen to just ask the direct question. Thank you for that, Chair. If I can continue on page 13, on page 13, the second bullet point, you're saying that during the year under review, PRASA received 9 new trains from Gibela at a cost of 1.9 billion. Are those trains to be understood as train sets or locomotives? And if it's only a locomotive, that then runs at a cost of 211 million rands. If you could just enlighten us around all of that. And then on page, on page 14, where you presented the total assets, I also take it that part of this assets is the trains that we just mentioned, the 1.9 billion. But then this only indicates a asset value in terms of replacement value, if I may put it that way. Asset value. Whereas we are interested in how did the money increase the capacity? In other words, how much of the trains that you are putting down here as an asset are actually in action? How many trains of this 1.9 million is actually a expenditure, in that we know that some of them fell over and, you know, there was all sorts of issues around the fact that they are not new anymore. So in what way was the asset then impeded in terms of additional cost related to keeping them in the condition as what you presented here as an asset? On page 25, around auto packs, I don't understand the bottom bullet point. If you could just clarify that for me, the number of buses related, released from the vehicle off the road list. How must I understand the vehicle off the road list? Covers 95% of the budgeted services, which will have a positive impact on revenue and passenger numbers. Explain the linkage to me, because I need to understand what vehicle off the road is, and then how did you get to, or how does the 95% of the list, how would that impact and lead to an revenue and passenger numbers? You say it's a positive impact, so I expect a business plan around this. So what are the details around that? Because I'm saying this against the background of a huge number of buses that you have in fleet, something like, I'm not sure how many, 900 or 500 buses, of which hardly 100 was contracted for axle service. So what is that ratio, and is that what we're talking of, and what is the new plan to improve that ratio, because certainly it's bad to have such a huge fleet standing while passengers are left on stations, and I'm sure those buses could be part of the contingency plan, yet they remain somewhere else instead of coming to Cape Town to help our passengers when they are stuck on platforms. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable De Freitas, is there anything? Honorable Ramatlakana, is there...
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Just one or two questions for me while I'm catching my breath. I just want to understand on the irregular expenditure. Irregular or fruitless expenditure explanation. Can you actually break it down for us to understand the term fruit irregular expenditure? What constitute the goods received and goods not received in that irregular expenditure? In other words, the question I'm asking, some of the irregular you're talking about, the condonation after the 2019, you may get into condonation if the contract in fact been completed. So I just want to understand in the year that we are talking about, what, because you can't sit here and say you don't know which goods were received and goods were not received, or which job was done and job was not done. So in Western City, can you perhaps break it down and tell us this is what it is, and also break it down so that we understand which of these are as a result of lapses. I want to know specifically if you explain that aspect. In the litigations that you engaged in, you win and you lose. I want to also understand in these, which of the cases have you lost, and you have to pay without receiving the goods. Otherwise, you pay without having to perform, or the contractor or the service provider has not performed any work, because it will say this is a result of the action of management that XX has happened. Which of those can you attribute to what expenditure? If you can perhaps just help us to understand that. Also, the column, the section that deals with fruitless expenditure. If you could just break it down, because so that we understand exactly what you're talking about. Because I'm asking this question because the end result, you
we're talking about the condonation. So in that, we need to break it down to understand which of the amounts are eligible for the condonation, if you want to take the condonation to that extent. Because others may not necessarily be in that space, don't fall in that space. The other questions have been asked, but I wanted to ask this question about the what you're saying, the depot. The issue about some of the depot is completed or is this percentage complete. But specifically, if you're talking about receiving trains, if the depot that was supposed to house those trains is going to, it says that Brandfontein, it's going out, it's going to be out on either as a bidding process, it's going to be in December. Where, what's going to happen to the trains that you're going to be receiving, continue to receive in terms of the package of them coming? You spoke about the procurement, and you spoke about the bid committees, and you spoke about some of them not meeting, and you spoke about what you called the question I want to ask in relation to that is this question about, were they not meeting, or did you disband them? And some of them disbanded and centralized the bid committee, who was supposed to be in another level, but centralized it and to Pretoria. So let's get it clear. Let's be clear. Were they simply just not meeting, who became dysfunctional? Because bid committees, I don't understand why they cannot meet. If there is the things that they need to consider, and if they are the employee of an organization, they work for PRASA, what would make them not to meet when there's a business to be undertaken? Something for me doesn't quite meet the eye. I don't understand what actually the problem is. It's not explained properly. Maybe you can explain it so that we understand. That's why I'm asking, they become defunct, or did you actually say, I no longer need these bid committees and therefore I'm going to have something else, or reconstitute them? If you have reconstituted them, how many have you, and what were the problems that you have picked up that end up reconstituting them? And if there were problems that has been identified, would you say they were underqualified and the replacement of them were with the highly qualified people that were able to do the task? The security issue and the safety issue, I think the head of security is here. I want to ask this question, because it's a troubling question, because when you talk about vandalism, you're talking about losing coaches, you're talking about all of these things. Some of the damage happens when the trains are parked. So where the problem? Where is the problem? And we also know that you have in-house warm bodies that deals with this. In some place where trains are parked, normally there would be the technology, cameras. What are you picking up in this problem of vandalism, including torching or burning trains when they are stationary? Maybe if you could just give us a feedback. Now, that is probably one of the things that is creating tension. Now, what the losing of coaches, and you did mention the number, of so many that you have lost, but perhaps we would get into the solution part as we get into this discussion, because I don't see this discussion as just speaking in the air without actual practical action about how do we resolve this issue. Autopex, we said minus 27.26. The fleet, what is actually happening with Autopex? And the head of Autopex is in the room, so we would probably get some advice. You know, the as a complementary transport to rail, what is happening with that particular aspect? Because my take is also that the question of that something is not going well there. At the maintenance, the whole maintenance spectrum, and I've seen a number of those buses park along the road for weeks and end. I can be specific that I work in Lensbeck, my constituency is in Lensbeck, and one of those two buses were parked along the road there for weeks and end, and they said because it's either a breakdown, there's not been a maintenance. So maybe if you can explain that in terms of what is it, what is actually the problem? Is it the problem got to do with the in-house issue, or is the problem external? Contract. It's a song. When is it going to be practicality? Because all of these hinges around that particular aspect. So if perhaps you can explain that. I want to leave this the whole thing about the signaling. Perhaps that too is also part of the problem, that we could get a little bit of insight about them. The signaling, it also hinges around the tension between what the authority, the regulatory authority, and yourself. But we can't just be debating society without action that deliver results. I'm sitting here, Chair, I'm asking myself this question, and I'm saying the country knows that this meeting, the top heavy meeting of PRASA and RSS are meeting Parliament. They are hoping tomorrow there will be announcement of some degree of solution. And I'm asking myself this question, what is it that will become that particular solution? Doctor, I'm looking at you. As I'm asking myself, in terms of strategies, head of strategy, what is it that could be a coming measurement in terms of the growing anger? Because you can clearly see your ridership and that going down. Not that there are no people that are supposed to be going down, but you are losing it because of the particular reason, including the vandalism or touching of trains, without any complimentary. When are we going to see, I want to ask this Chair to you, the Transnet issue, the whole thing about the Transnet capacity, the leasing of locomotive to Transnet, what are we talking about? What rent and send are we talking about? And I dare ask this question again. Against what do we have? Against the very same locomotive that you paid billions for. What is that going to be the solution? And I'm looking at the Salt River here in Cape Town, and I'm looking at Maitland, I'm looking at Kraaifontein. I'm asking, is there a commitment to solve this problem? If we're still talking about a contract, and we're still talking about it, and even that contract that we're talking about is business as usual. It is not business as usual, unless I'm reading this wrong. But I don't want just to talk theory, I want to talk practice. in that aspect. Is it not a strategy or plan, Chair, to run a parallel program? How much money do you have in a bank? Isn't it 17 billion that you have in a bank, or more than that, or less, little less than that, and generating interest? While we have a problem that we're supposed to be dealing with, including the delay, the cancellation of, what is saving? Is a saving equal saving money in real term, or is the expenditure that was not incurred, that was not undertaken? There's a two different story here about the savings. You may have canceled. If you cancel, you may calculate it in your books as a savings. But the job is not done. In my little understanding of the saving, that if you are supposed to pay 10 rand, you negotiate yourself to 5 rand. You then save for 5 rand. But in this case, there's not simple as all of that. Maybe that's where I will leave this chair, but I, Dr. Makura, don't you think that with thousands or hundreds of the reserves that you have as part of the police could be a complementary force, even more than what 100 volunteers that has been trained by the city? In the reserves that you have in the police who are not on call-up, you have powers, you have the uniform behind, you have all the equipment that they are supposed to go with. Shouldn't it be one of the package of solutions that you look at? Obviously, there will be some rent and send that you talk about at the end. Because when the reservist is called up, there would be whatever that is paid towards that particular reservist. I mean, there are hundreds of them who are qualified police officers, but are reservists. They only work when they are called by the police to do that particular work. This is not a plan that can be put together. I mean, that's where you come from. You come from that environment, and you know it better. So I'm just asking, and I'm thirsty for practical solution that you can come up with in terms of finding it, rather than to having whole lots of other things. You don't have it. You cancel the contract. You don't have the body there, or the people that are there are not quite giving you the results. Stations patrolling at the station, linking them up with what you call money or railway police, that they've been reactivated. I'm just asking. You may, and you have time to talk to this issue, because I want to have that engagement, because I don't think that we are quite out of the box. I don't think we are out of the box. We are stuck in the box. And that box is not bringing solution. I'm sorry to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Siari. If we can just, because the Honorable Member just Ayalololo.
Thanks, Chair. I want to start from the question I asked in the previous round, which Honorable Ramatlakane touched a bit on it, that I see an attitude of frustration and raising up our hands to say we're defeated. And my question was, what is our intelligence telling us? What is our research saying? What is contributing towards this vandalism of our property? And in the foreword of the chairperson of the board, she says, commuter services are at its lowest performance. On-time train performance is currently at 68%. Trains scheduled, 13% of schedules are being cancelled. Is that not a frustration that communities are faced with on a daily basis. Of course, the chairperson says there's a get-on-track rescue plan. But as colleagues try to answer questions, I don't feel that plan. I don't feel that get-on-track rescue plan. That's why I'm saying I come to a conclusion that the attitude is that of raising our hands and say there's nothing more we can do. That's why you are even calling upon the committee to appreciate what is happening in communities. The group CEO in the report, in his statement, is emphasizing the growth of personnel costs, staff having grown from 12,000 to 17,000, although it is explained that it's over period. But I observe a temptation, which I've observed even with RSR, that whenever an organization is in financial stress, the soft target becomes staff and say, we must go to reduce staff personnel, without considering what it will do to the country in terms of what the government of the day says on job creation. Because there's nowhere where the report says we've tried 1, 2, 3 to address our financial distress, and this is part of it, or this is the last resort. And I was discussing with somebody informally that once staff members feel insecure, feel threatened that at any time we can be retrenched, that becomes a problem, and their morale goes down, and their performance will go down, obviously. And the government of the day is worried about retrenchment of staff. You might have heard about the intervention on retrenching of staff in the broader public sector, SABC, and so on. But I see us rushing there or being tempted to start there without clarifying what is it that we have done to address our financial situation. In the report on human resource management, there's a report about who's there and so on. But that report says this excludes foreign nationals. Can we be taken on board on the foreign nationals that are employed? Because in this report, it is not there. It is not reported. And I take you have employed foreign nationals because of their scarce skills. And what is the plan in terms of transferring that skill to the South African citizens? On page 65 of the report, I see the report on DC processes. I see the report, it only captures dismissals. There are no written warnings, there are no verbal warnings. Should I conclude that whenever there is a misconduct, the organization rushes to dismissal? Or maybe is it informed by the 5,000 increase in personnel cost, and this is a way of trying to reduce staff in order to save on personnel cost? Of course, there is the issue of irregular expenditure. My colleagues have raised it. And matters of emphasis as raised by DG. Somewhere they talk about litigations. And I raised it even with other boards that maybe in our report, if we can also include qualifications of, especially of directors and top management. In the chairperson's foreword, the chairperson says, filling of critical vacancies is as urgent as nothing. But even here, I hear that there are still people who are acting. When you are introducing themselves, acting what? I have two caps, and so on and so on. What is the plan? Because the AG is also complaining about leadership of the organization. What is the plan to fill those positions as a matter of urgency? Because in the chairperson's foreword, she says that is an urgency. I would want to hear, because PRASA spend a lot of money on CAPEX. What is the percentage that goes to, as part of transformation, what is the percentage that goes to PDIs and HDIs? As far as I can recall, unless if it has changed, there must be a report on a quarterly basis to Treasury as to how do you empower previously disadvantaged and historically disadvantaged. But I don't see it in the both reports. I don't see it. What are you doing in that regard? Maybe if we have a conversation around that. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Sibanda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think it will be proper to start with housekeeping. And if we jump, that matter won't be addressed in future. There was an apology by the chairperson of the PRASA board, Umam Weyam, about some of the colleagues. And yes, I know, Chairperson, that some of the things which she's touching are sensitive, but in future we won't agree, because the time allocated to you, well, it was to start with PRASA, but your own people failed to come. That's not our fault. What about us? Even ourselves, we do have some of responsibilities, but we sacrificed that we wanted to finish with this work today, tonight. I mean, in future, we won't accept. Then, let me proceed then. Chairperson, I wanted to thank once more about the presentation as well as the responses. But nevertheless, we ought to interact. Number one, about the issue of auto-PEX. On slide number 19. I need a clarity there, because they are saying AutoPEX has a total fleet of 517 buses, but they only operated with 90, and at the end they improved to 190 buses. At the end, by the end of 2018. And also they indicated that some of this fleet were defective. But again, to me, that is a contradiction. When they say lack of availability of the fleet was the main contributor of the drastic reduction of revenue collected. What do you mean exactly? Because from the 517 and the number which you given and the buses which we were operating with doesn't tally. I'm subject for correction. We need a fair explanation that what is it exactly? What do you mean exactly? And then also, Chairperson, somewhere in the annual report, in terms of blood, PRASA CRES, we in terms of Brasa stock. They spoke about the railway station buildings, workplace facilities, vacant land, commercial facilities and residential facilities. I need an explanation. This thing, if you recall very well, early in the morning or earlier on, I've asked about the issue of audit. What do you mean here exactly? If you, because most of the stations are very old. And they have been vandalized, etc. Because if you are giving this statement, give us breakdown. That what do you mean exactly? How many stations are still, I mean, available, which are still in the good condition? Rather than to give a broad statement as if you are having a station, because it's a nation kukunji. Whereby, where I'm referred, sometimes they are being utilized by those people, destitute people, I can say. And also, these residential facilities, I clean. Tell us exactly. Which one do you mean? Let's in the other old ways, which are not working anymore. Give us breakdown before you write about this thing. Because at the end, you'll write about huge monies, which whatever, the cost of this. Because with all this report, there are financial implications. What do you mean exactly? And then also, I'll go back to AutoPEC in terms of the report by the of compliance by the Auditor General. You see, let me go to liability management. It is reported that the entity has borrowed funds from Brasa without authorization of the Minister of Finance by notice in the National Government Gazette in contravention of Section 66(3)(b) of the PFMA. May you please take us on board what happened exactly? Because most of the time, you know, if we talk about this irregular expenditure and wasteful and expenditure, etc., etc., excuse me, such cases are happening. And what is the remedy? What have you done in order to make sure that this thing doesn't happen anymore? Because the PFMA is the it's guiding us how to utilize some of these monies. And then also, in terms of the expenditure management, the accounting authority did not take effective step to prevent irregular expenditure of 332.7 million and fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 3.8 million as required by Section 51(1) of the PFMA. And this irregular expenditure, which was caused by not following the proper procurement procedure, processes to appoint service providers, I wanted to appeal once more. Chairperson, this it is contributed by some people who are having interest with tenders. What have you put in place in order to avoid this thing not to happen anymore? Because it's very disturbing that each and every year, financial year, each and every, I mean, end of the financial year, such things are coming out. As if it's a mistake. As long there are no drastic steps taken to discipline some of the officials or some of the people responsible to do this, this thing will continue. Again, the investigation, the reason case which the investigation which is investigated by the public protector in terms of the section 182 of the Constitution about the allegation relating to human resources management and procurement processes. Now, here comes the question. I think that is Autopex. Is that the only case? Is this the only case? If it is the only case, it's okay. But if there's something else, there's something wrong. Of which, at the end, I wanted to appeal maybe to the department that one time you must make an oversight in some of these entities. There are two types of visits. First one, it's an announced visit. Second one is unannounced visit. I'll put an example. There was a time when we were doing an oversight visit. I think it was when it was Brasa and Jobek. We were told about the center in Niger that is functioning, etc., etc. And then when we requested to go there to Niger, and we budgeted for that, for our trip to go there, there was nothing, zero. To avoid, because some people are just giving the reports for the sake of reporting, we must make sure that these things are there, exactly. If not, so that some steps must be taken. I feel very strong, Chairperson, that this is not the only case. Why I'm saying that? If you check from the report of PRASA, the issue of regressing and some of the things which are not accounted for, there are plenty. And then also, in terms of the procurement and contract management, goods, works, and or services were not procured through the procurement processes as required by Section 51(1)(a) Roman figure B of the APFMA. Some contracts were awarded to suppliers based on deviation that were not recorded and approved by the delegated authorities. This shows exactly when we talk about internal controls and when we talk about risk management. Because this thing, if we had very strong internal controls and risk management, they were going to detect this thing long ago, not now. Chairperson of the board, you see, the reason why we were demanding that each and every person must be here to respond himself or herself, because we realize that you can't respond, you can't be all over respond for them on their behalf, because some people are very naughty. They are sacrificing about other people instead of performing with their responsibilities. They are failing to respond with their responsibilities. At the end, when they're supposed to go in account, they hide with their thumbs, and then they sacrifice with individuals. Myself, I'm very sensitive in terms of gender sensitivity. That's why every time I talk with my concern with my chairperson, that like yourself, you are a female, and some of the chairpersons are females. Don't allow them to take chances. I repeat, don't allow some people to take chances because you are a female. No. You are deployed there not by mistake. because of qualifications and interviews and the relevant processes. But if, like we requested earlier on, that we are encouraging these interactions within the entities so that you can help each other. Chairperson, also, some of the things which were, because my worry is that with BRASA, is the funding of the, of the Auditor General, that most of the entities are regressing. No matter yesterday, one of the entities was refusing to accept that it's regressing. He thought that it's our own idea, while is the findings of the Auditor General. He said, among the things, that not all materials and financial statements were adequate and supporting records were not provided. That is happening. Some of the people, when they're supposed to produce some of the documents, they'll give you the dry clean slip. And if you're not careful, it's better to be hands-on, because if you're not hands-on, one day, when you check in your shelves, you'll conclude that these people have accounted correctly, so, but one day you'll be shocked when you check some of these documents that they're not relevant. And then, Chairperson, lastly, you see, Chairperson, the issue of the declining of the passenger services and passengers, which have dropped from 2.8 million in 2010 to 465 something like that in 2017-18, while trains run have dropped, also the trains have dropped. Let us, I'm requesting, let's look at this thing sideways and positively so, that what are the main cause, because some people, they can take this thing lightly. All of us will lose job, because if it's declining, keep on declining, nothing will be left. How are you going to give salaries to other people? You better to curtail the staff. You better to cut the staff. Because another thing, time and again, I'll ask this question. The previous president made a clarion call to say that each and every entity within the institution, they must make sure that they create jobs. How many jobs have you created? And then also, which is the mistake, you know, some of the people, when they report about the issue of interns and the people who are given opportunities, they talk about the people in the urban areas. They talk about the people in the metros where their offices are there. But they don't cover South Africa geographically. For example, there was an entity, same entity which was crying foul yesterday, saying that structures and some of the things are aging. Sorry. While we are saying in South Africa, in terms of human capacity, there are a lot of graduates staying there, sitting there. What am I going to appeal as well? Do you have any plan to market yourself as BRASA? Because if you're not marketing yourself, definitely, it won't go anywhere. And the strategy of marketing yourself, I think we do have a responsibility involve the communities. Part of marketing yourself is to involve communities. Do you have any plan to involve communities? Because if we were involving communities, I think some of the things which are happening, they're going to be minimized. I'll make a practical example. We visited Japan some time ago. In Japan, we were taken to a train which runs about 560 kilometers per hour. But here in South Africa, can it happen in South Africa? Because they will vandalize, they will cut all the electricity, they will cut everything. Because you don't involve the communities. Chairperson, next time, bye-bye.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Let's get responses. And if we can be very economic of time, I can see a lot of faces. Some's brain have already slept. It's just the body which is here with us. So I believe that we'll be able to be very, very economic. Most of the things, honorable, my colleagues have really touched on them. But I'll keep on impressing onto you that it is 4 years that the Auditor General raised one and the same issues. Financial and performance management challenges, leadership challenges, internal controls deficiencies, lack of consequence management, procurement management of procurement issues, particularly contract management, issues of IT. And these are the things that have not been adequately responded to. And I hope we will be talking to these issues for probably the last time, because there really is not, there are no efforts to make sure that these repeat findings find their way out. And then we are able to focus. At the center, your vision and your mission and your values are saying something, but from the look of things, the opposite is what is happening. If you talk about having reliable, effective, safe, reliable public transport, And we see in this that we are seeing, it definitely is highly challenging for people to can be able to look at what you aspire to do, but the opposite is really happening. I think the last thing that I would like to say is Group CEO and CFO, next time when you make a presentation, it will be so ideal that you are able to indicate in terms of the subsidiaries as to what exactly financially are they performing the same way that you have so eloquently indicated what are the critical things that they are doing, the targets that they have been able to meet and the targets that they have not been able to meet. You zoom, not that huge, into the financial statement and be able to say this is where the challenges are. The elephant in the room, the Wi-Fi, AutoPEX, what exactly is happening? Those are the things that I thought honorable members would raise and were able to deal with the challenge. Because that one, it will just be like Vexman. It will never leave us until we're able to say, indeed, what is being done
the truth shall set you free. Wi-Fi. You don't have buses. Where are your priorities? There's less in terms of the buses that are on the road, but you're able to get money to go and put in the Wi-Fi systems. Come on. Really? Which world are we living in? There are certain things that are nice to have. And if we can be able to populate our roads with a lot of public transport and have our rail system really being up to a very good class where all of us would be able to enjoy. I remember in the past 4 years you had how many, seven CEOs? Almost, right? Yeah, seven CEOs in the past 4 years. And one of the CEOs was saying that when he came to us, he impressed upon us that from now on, everybody executive in Grasa must go into the metro rail trains when they go to work and stop using Gautrain, because the more they use this train, the better it will be for them to can be able to correct the anomalies that they are realizing. And unfortunately, just spent some few months because it's omunye pesko munye pesko munye, seven in 4 years. that's why things, yeah, omunye pesko munye. How many have been acting CEOs in here? Three, two? Nobody knows. But these are the realities. Omunye pesko munye. That is why we were looking forward to seeing all of you here using metro rail going to work. And that did not happen because bekune omunye pesko munye. Can we get responses and can we be out of here in the next 15 minutes, if it's possible? Some of the responses that we need to be elaborated upon, can we give you 48 working hours for the response to come to Parliament, because we are busy preparing the report to the National Assembly. Mekwea.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll time keep for people so that we do stay within the 15 minutes. But maybe there are some questions that require me to respond directly. There was a question around filling of critical vacancies, which is in my foreword in the annual report. When this board took over in April, one of the very first priorities on our list was the filling of critical vacancies, starting from CEO to executive level. The Human Capital Management Committee that is chaired by Director Matlala over there looked at the profiles, the job profiles, the job descriptions, engaged in a process with National Treasury to fast-track the process so that we are able to advertise for headhunting agencies that will assist us with the advertisement, with the screening of candidates, and eventually providing us with a shortlist. We also felt that as a board that we need to introduce some independence or some external observers into the process, so to say, because of the history with the structures such as the BEC, the BAC that had literally collapsed, as is said in the report. So to that end, we have obtained observer and expertise from the Public Service Commission that will also be participating in the process, as well as from National Treasury, to ensure that the process is really kept clean throughout. And in this week and the next week, the teams will be sitting, the address, the ad went out for recruitment agencies, they responded. We did have a bit of a delay because of the fact that we were still waiting for the for National Treasury and the Public Service Commission to provide us with the necessary expertise. So in the next week and two, the evaluation of those headhunting agencies will happen so that the ads do go out seeking for people to apply. Then there was a question on a public protector's report, and I should just say perhaps I'm a little confused. There is a public protector's report that has been issued, and the 2015, the derailed report. So that is being processed in terms of disciplinaries. There is also some reports that were made to the public protector in the Western Cape, and that is still in process. That report hasn't been issued. So we are not aware of a public protector's report around AutoPEX. And if I missed a boat somewhere, then we will go back and research. But those are the only two that we can talk on. But the Western Cape one, is it Western Cape or Eastern Cape? Has not, Western Cape? It's Western Cape, yes. That report is not out yet. So we are awaiting that report. Honorable Sibande, you will be pleased to know that on the 25th, next week, the Kibela factory will be launched by the president. I can assure you that I have personally been there, and the board has personally been there. So we know it's there, we know it exists, we know we've seen the people working, we've seen the train sets, and the public launch will happen during a transport month next week, Thursday. And we should also say it comes at a time when the investors summit will be taking place in the country. So I think it's just a good time for us to be giving that positive messaging. And Honorable Sibande, my apologies once again for the board members who did leave, but also just to clarify that none of the executives that we called late and arrived have left. They haven't left. Everyone is still here. The board members who did leave are some of those who were here from the morning, who did come in yesterday to be present in Parliament today for the reasons that I've said to you. And maybe just to clarify, because in some of the questions there were issues that were being raised about retrenchments and getting rid of people, and that we should say that we have not had that discussion yet. We do recognize that there are some parts of the business that need to be right-sized. We do recognize that there are skill gaps in some parts of the business, and that we do need the correct skills to be deployed and employed. We do recognize as well that there's a role that we have to play in job creation. The Kibela factory is an example, and I think last week the question came up as to whether the jobs that were promised in that space have actually been promised. So we have a combination of having to fix some parts of the business so that they are efficient, but we also recognize that there are many, many skills that are required in the entity to meet the programs that we have going into the future, and particularly technical skills, you know, initial national qualification reports have indicated that we have serious challenges in terms of technical skills. So, but I think it does need to be on the record that we have not had a headcount reduction conversation yet as the board. So there were a number of AutoPEX questions, and I will ask Nati to be very succinct on those to respond, and maybe to wrap that conversation or that response, because Nati can speak on behalf of AutoPEX but cannot speak on behalf of AutoPEX shareholder on what the future of AutoPEX is or should be. So I'll ask the group CEO to do that. And maybe at some stage I'll also invite the chairperson of FCIP just to address the concerns that the honorable members have raised about our ability to unblock the system so that we can actually start the tender processes and roll out on many of the projects that we have mentioned here that will take us to that level where we are providing enough train sets, where we are providing a safe and reliable transport to our commuters. Thank you.
3 minutes, Mr. Kenna.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try and do the 3 minutes. I received about 6 questions, and I'm not going to deal with them. Unfortunately, they are interrelated. We can deal with them in summary from Honorable Ramatlakane Hunsinger and Honorable Sibanda. The first one was around the availability of buses, 517, at some stage operating 90 buses, and then increased to 190 buses. Indeed, it is the case. The 45% to 50% of our buses have reached the end of their life. They are about 800, and they've done 850 kilometers to 1.1 kilometers. And therefore, some of those buses, it is not, you can't even, 1.1 million kilometers. So they've reached the end of their life. Their performance is challenged. The cost of operating them is also challenged from that point of view. As I speak, so that's one of the causes for the buses being off the road. That is, means there are breakdowns. They are not available for services. The other aspects of that, of course, there could be a few of them on accidents. There could be a few of them not being shortage of spares. And you will understand that the revenue is a function of the quality of the services and the capacity to be able to carry out passengers. Therefore, the reduction in passengers is also a result of the fact that we haven't had sufficient buses. I must also take a disclaimer after Honorable Sibanda said we are here to account personally for ourselves, that when I left Autopex in 14-15, it was at a profit. And when I joined them this year, and in January, that I found them in this particular situation. They were at 90 buses. We increased to 190 buses at this moment. We're hoping to be able to increase to the required scheduled services. On the question of the borrowing, it's a question of Section 66, as it has been mentioned, versus the Legal Succession Act. There's a financial interpretation of the situation, and there's also a legal interpretation. The management of PRASA in general seek legal legal opinion on this matter, and I think this week we did receive a legal opinion which has given us a certain level of clarity with regard to the borrowing. And if I were to go in detail into that, I will take a longer time. Safe to say that there is that challenge of the interpretation. The issue of the breakdown is also a function of some of the things that I've mentioned earlier. I hope I have summarized in less than 3 minutes, but in future, or if we need to give written responses, we will gladly do so.
CFO.
Thank you, Chair. I think quickly, perhaps, let's just get to the land auto graph. I think that will be an easy one to explain. Let's start off with 9, with graph 9. Page 9. I should apologize, really, not to actually explain my legends, because those arrows, they would actually tell what is happening. Where we talk of revenue going up, it means when it's going the green. In fact, I think one of the indications my green, which is actually positive impact on the comprehensive income, and going up, it shows that there is an increase on that particular one. Going down, it shows that it will act differently when actually dealing with the expenditure, because if I increase the expenditure from the previous year, the impact of the financial is going down. Therefore, that's why if you look at those and you go in here, a good example is my subsidy there, which actually is going up, which shows an increase. Go to the next page, let's pick up the revenue, the expenditure there. Where we have got an expenditure, look at the first one, director's emoluments. It's going down. 2018, the previous year, it was 8.6, that's an easy example. It's positive, therefore it is a reduction. There is a positive variance there. And you look where we have got a problem. Let's go to the insurance. The insurance the previous year, it was 486. Therefore, the mere fact is that we have increased the expenditure. The impact on that is actually eating up on whatever we've got. Therefore, it's negative impact. I should have explained my legends. My apologies. I think that was an easy one for me. I will be okay. Thank you very much. Okay. The others, I will split. I will actually respond in writing where we have got the irregular expenditure, which ones, but the definition of the irregular expenditure, I think it's important to understand that it's an expenditure that is incurred in contravention of or not in accordance with the requirements of an applicable legislature. And whereas when we talk of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it's an expenditure made in vain and would have been avoided if reasonable care has been exercised. A huge split of the irregular expenditure will be where we actually identify which ones actually it's because of the deviation from competitive bidding, which were mainly the general overhauls. At the time, we'll have the amount, we'll try and summarize those, which were continuing sort of contracts for a long time, not going through the proper bidding process. And then we had some that were actually deviations from which were contraventions of the Act. Therefore, we will actually split those and show them exactly how much are they compromise.
CEO.
Yeah, I think the one that I will deal with is the bid committees. It's true that they've been dysfunctional and at the same time not meeting, further not being populated by qualified or a mix of skill sets that are needed. We have basically reconstituted the bid committees as we speak. With, for example, all our bid committees have got senior people participating now, whether at SCM, legal, finance, and other related expertise. But we also emphasize that the user departments are responsible for the development of the bid specifications, so that the bid specification committees consider what has actually been vetted by the relevant users. Furthermore, all the bid bid committees also have got the probity sort of officers. These were largely drawn from internal audit. However, in the light of the findings by AG, that the independence of the internal audit is compromised, we are now looking at other mechanisms through which the probity issues can be looked at. That's something that we are now looking at in terms of whether we should subject all tenders within the organization through probity. In some instances, we believe that also contributes towards the lessening of the speed with which we are procuring as an organization. The last part is that there is a vetting process that's also done by security management within the organization. And we are now looking at a process through which the vetting can actually be done internally through the relevant supply chain units, acquiring systems that can indicate whether the suppliers that we are using are qualified, whether they've got cases against them, they are able to perform what is actually required, and so on and so forth. These are basically the systems that we have put in place in order to drive the spending issues. But we have also indicated that in certain areas we need bid committees that are purpose-specific rather than generic ones, so that we can drive especially high-value items that are critical for purposes of ensuring that the speed is delivery of services. And in so doing, we also say that these committees must actually be allowed a time within which they can manage the bids that they are actually dealing with. This is in particular to support the modernization items that we have. With respect to issues of housing, I would ask Tara to cover those that are related to auto Prasakref. And I think there are issues of security. Some of them are specific recommendations that we will look at as part of our overall package of interventions that we must consider, especially the issue in relation to the reservists that has been mentioned.
Thanks, Kutsio. Thanks, Chairperson. I think we're going to have to provide a report as requested as to how many of the stations are functional and how many of the stations that are not functional. And then also on the houses, currently we have 785 houses across the country. And we have outside tenants who are not PRASA employees. In some of the houses, we have our own PRASA employees. And then we also have retired PRASA employees who are staying in those properties. And some are in good condition. Others are in a state. If you look at Mayfair houses in Johannesburg, I think there were a number of people who wrote to the portfolio committee around some of those houses. And the reason some of the houses are in the state that they are in, because the people who are occupying the houses, which mainly are PRASA employees and ex-PRASA employees, they are refusing to pay rent. They are refusing to pay rent. The case in point is the Mayfair, where we are taking each other to court, and then also we have now agreed with the city of Johannesburg that they must cut the electricity as well as water because the tenants are refusing to, and the sad part of it is that some of the people who are occupying those houses, they used to work for the property management division of PRASA, which is now the subsidiary Intersite. So they know the ins and outs of the business and so forth. But we can provide the information as to which of those houses are in a state and which are in a good state. We have started what we call the residential improvement program, where we are improving the houses where the tenants have renewed the leases and they're up to date with the payments. But where the tenants are refusing to pay, even our own employees that work for PRASA are refusing to pay rent. They want to stay for free. So we will provide that information, and also for the stations, which stations are in good conditions and which stations that are not in good conditions. I think it's better that way. H-
Have all the questions been responded to?
About processes that we had to unblock. You remember the first time when we were around here, that was, I think, sometime in June this year. And obviously, the concern was that what is actually happening with the capital expenditure that hasn't actually been spent. And as we know that, the history in Prasa, things didn't actually go well. And we are quite adamant that we are actually going to try and make sure that we lay the foundations, basic foundations, that are obviously going to drive the whole capital program in a better manner. A lot of hours, a lot of work has actually gone into that, CEO, as you just alluded onto some of the issues regarding the constitution of the bid committees. As I'm speaking right now, we're supposed to be having a meeting tomorrow, and this FCIP meeting, obviously, to me, it's coming with great excitement because we've had quite a lot of input from management, and we've actually challenged them that we want to see at least about, from each division, kind of money that they're actually going to be putting forward as expenditures that want to whittle off this 12.6 billion rand that is sitting as CAPEX money. You will realize that on page of our, the financial statements on page 98, there's an item called rolling stock. The rolling stock basically, it's actually starting to talk about the whole Kibela program. But let me assure you that on a monthly basis or whatever we're actually meeting at the FCIP meeting, we're getting a report which is called the strategic assets that are actually being rolled out vis-a-vis Kibela with all its modernization and everything. A lot of questions were asked about how far have we actually gone through in terms of the whole CAPEX or money that has actually been spent as far as that is concerned. There is a report that we received, I think, on the 11th of October dealing about all this program from the beginning of this particular year right now. The only issue that we didn't actually want to actually confuse members around here is to start talking about programs that initiated from April going forward up to right now in September. There's been requests, for instance, I think when we actually made the last time, that in future we are going to endeavor that we provide this report as part of, as an additional presentation, so that members can understand what is actually happening in terms of the old CAPEX. I didn't want to say let us distribute it the way it is, because it's not in a presentation slide that is actually going to be logical. But I will make sure that we, as part of the presentation, again, Shane, we take it further and try to make it much easier for any person that actually wants to understand what is happening up to now. But I think we're happy that the SEM policy has actually been drafted. We're looking forward to tomorrow's meeting to go and see how far we can actually go with that. I'm happy that, in the next meeting that we will be having, then we'll actually be talking progress of exactly how far we have gone with spending that particular money. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Acting DG, 2 minutes of your closing remarks.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and all of the good members of the committee, and my colleague, thank you. I think, Chairperson, I just wanted to say one or two words. We do appreciate the role that Parliament is doing, which is an oversight on us as a department as well as our entities that report to us. We really appreciate that. And the identified weaknesses that were observed since this morning between the department and our entities, it's our commitment that we work on them and create a clear plan as to develop and address them, all of them, in fact, and also not to stop talking past each other and just to resolve our issues in-house. That is our commitment we want to do here. The weaknesses insofar as the CAPEX and the OPEX spending and addressing in terms of those challenges, I think this is very clear that that is where the challenges are. We have identified that as one of the weaknesses that the entity, a process as an entity is having. So we want to believe that is going to be happening now because both of us are singing from the same hymn book now. We have seen also the challenges that have happened due to some, you know, the vandalism and stuff like that. And we want to be happy that there is a plan that is in place to deal with those issues, thinking outside the box, innovation, which has been identified by the members here. You have assisted us a lot. I want to believe that we have taken some notes on that one. The repeat findings by the Auditor General.
Thank you very much.
That one, oh, sorry.
2 minutes is over.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chairperson, RSR, 3 minutes.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. We remain committed as the RSR to ensure that the work that is entrusted unto us is done, and at all times we are available and willing to engage on all the issues on whatever the extent that is allowed that we can work with operators, we will do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was 1 minute. Chairperson Brasa, 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I really don't need 3 minutes. I think we have, through our comments, demonstrated that we also continue being committed to ensuring that BRASA does come out of the rut that it's been in. I hope that we have given the committee the confidence by bringing these two annual reports to this committee in this short space of time that we've been here. And we look forward to a much brighter annual report that we will truly own. And by saying a much brighter, I don't mean that all the indicators will be green, because it will not take us only 1 year to get out of the rut. But at least it will give the portfolio committee the confidence that there is stability, that the issues that are serious red flag are being addressed, and that there is a plan in place to demonstrate that we do want to see BRASA come back and provide the services that it requires. When we issued the statement after the court order on between BRASA and RSR, we said that our going to court was by no means to be saying that staff executives are now let off the hook in terms of making sure that BRASA is safe and that we are compliant. So we really want that to be a commitment that we continue to make, that we will continue to hold executives accountable for the work of ensuring that we run a safe rail service. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Let me say, on behalf of the committee, it has been a long day, but it has been a very fruitful day, and a very very a day which we can be able to say we are better than when we arrived in the morning, because we appreciate the challenges, the successes, and every other thing that goes with the package. Let me thank you, Chairperson RSR, Dr. Tunkunta, Dr. Tunkunta, and the acting CEO. You really have been up to the task. I need to indicate that when we last week were seeing these things, we were saying, but what are these people trying to do? Do you want to bring South Africa into place? But today we appreciated the having received the explanation as to why certain things had to happen in certain ways. To all the functionaries from BRASA who are here, we owe it to the people of the Republic of South Africa to make sure that the public transport is in order. Whether you have been there when the CEOs comes and go is neither here nor there. What becomes important is we should be able to say to the people of the Republic that your assets, here we are because these committers are your bosses. They are your bosses, and therefore we need to treat them with respect. We need to be able to do things in an orderly manner. Arguments that are there, should be are purported to be there, it's not in the interest of the committers, but really, let's treat our people with respect and be able to improve. We would anticipate that there will be a lot of buses on the road from Autopex. We anticipate that there will be an increase. If you can do us a favor and remove those graveyards, the graveyard in Salt River, Kraaifontein, the graveyard in Braamfontein, would really say that now it looks like we are on track, we are not derailed. Honorable members, it's been a long day. Tomorrow is just a day that you take a break because we have to comply with our party mandates, our party caucuses, and we will resume again on Tuesday. Thank you for being so jealously guarding the budget and how it has been used and how we can be able to improve the lives of the people of the Republic. To all in Sandri, all the board members who are here, to the staff of Parliament in the main. This is the grilling time that we always appreciate, and we must say it here now that we appreciate you persevering us. The last thing, my thousand apology for what happened earlier on. On behalf of the committee, we profusely apologize to everybody as we're dealing with the matters. I don't need to elaborate, but thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.